I was thinking of, since you recommended like reading the Bible with different versions, how about in different dialects? But on the other hand, I was thinking if like if you read the Filipino Bible, does it increase your bias, the biases of a Filipino thinking?
Yeah, I don't know what is a Filipino Bible.
There's a like Tagalog version.
The one that the NIV people did.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so because they're gonna. I don't think it would have changed that. I think you should read a Tagalog Bible, especially. I don't think that we finally got a good one, right? It took 20 years to get it, but they finally have a good one. Wasn't it last year they introduced it? I was here and met the guys. Yeah, Lynn.
I think if it's a good translation, it's similar to what you were saying about reading different translations like New King James or New Living Translation. It for me, it makes it richer because certain different languages use different words that have a different richness because I read the Bible in French and Spanish sometimes, and I find sometimes if I read something I've read a million times in English, yeah. But I read it in a different translation, yeah. In a different language, like something different will strike you that you've never seen before just because of the richness of the language.
It's great. Yeah. Yeah, I read mine in tongues.
You should read Tagalog Bible.
It would sound like I was. Okay, let's try a genre-specific discussion here, and we'll close with that. So we'll look at the parables. Now, just for your information, what we looked at the last two sessions is what's called general hermeneutics. Those are principles that just relate to the entire Bible and our understanding. Now we're moving into an area called special hermeneutics. So special hermeneutics deals with the interpretive rules related to a particular genre. Are you hearing something?
Yeah.
Feedback. This looked like you ate something bad or something. Is it gone? Is it gone? Is it gone? All right, I can't hear it, so it's not bothering me. Let's look at parables, and then we got a little parable exercise to close this out. A parable, number one, is a story that is true to life and teaches a spiritual lesson. So very simple. A story that's true to life and teaches a spiritual lesson. Now, when we try to understand a parable, here's some of the things that we do. Number two, look for the audience. Look for the audience. The setting of a parable often provides the key to understand it. The parable was designed primarily to provoke a response from the listener. Therefore, to understand a parable, put yourself in the place of the audience and try to hear what they heard. So Jesus used parables specifically for a particular group and audience. And so it's understanding who the audience was for that parable. That's the first thing you have to ascertain if you're going to understand what the parable's about. Who was he talking to, and what kind of response was he trying to get? Now, sometimes you have a parable with a multiple audience. For example, the three parables that really become one, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. There's actually three separate audiences that we find out about, the text tells us about. So, do you know who the primary audience is? The Pharisees. So that ought to tip you off. This is a parable directed primarily at Pharisees. But there were two other groups that were overhearing, that were listening. Do you know who they were? Disciples is an obvious one. Do you know who else? Tax collectors. Yeah. Tax collectors and sinners. So you got three very distinct audiences. Primarily, it's addressed to the Pharisees, but also disciples, tax collectors, and gatherers. So if you think about just what you know about the parable, what was the end result of the Pharisees? What response did they have? What did the parable do to them? Huh? What did the parable do to them? Yeah, rebuke them. It was meant as a rebuke to them. How about the disciples? Or let's do the sinners and tax collectors. What's the response? What do you think? Huh, Tricia?
Felt valued.
Felt valued? Maybe, yeah, maybe. Karen? I called on you because there's a mic there. The tax collectors and sinners, what do you think? What was their response?
Hello there. Yeah. I think the tax collectors
are enlightened. Okay, enlightened, yeah. I guess everybody was probably enlightened. Janice, what do you think? Why do you always smile when I call on you? What do you think? Tax collectors, sinners, they heard the parable.
I think, yeah, same in canon, enlightened.
Same? They probably felt comforted, don't you think?
Right.
I mean, who ends up being the good guy in the story? Who gets forgiveness? And the sinner, right? The son, the profligate, the prodigal, the one who avoided religion and just went straight for sin. He's the one who gets forgiveness, gets grace, mercy, big party. You're sitting there, you're a sinner with a hungry heart. That's good. You like it. What about the disciples? What do you think what's the response that Jesus is looking for in them? Pinky, what do you think? Pastor or Mike, would you, Carol? What do you think, or Janice?
Maybe,
what do you think the disciples?
Maybe Jesus wanted to see that enlightenment in them, in their eyes, like, oh, that's okay. Right. That's what we need to extend to others.
To what?
To sinners, to other people.
Yeah, so it's a challenge to them to seek and save the lost. See? Yeah, so three different audiences, three different end results. So look for the audience. The audience is an important part of understanding the parable. Number three, look for the main point. Now, this is really important when it comes to a parable. Parables generally have one main point. When a parable has multiple points, they're usually either obvious or explained in the text. So it's best to think about it this way. One point, many applications. But one point. So what you don't do is take a parable and try to find every person, every element in the parable has some kind of hidden meaning. There's a point, there's a one big punchline that Jesus is getting at. What is the punchline, the main point? You see, even when we have a more elaborate parable like the four soils, where Jesus explains the difference, there's still one big point. The point is, it's the state of our heart that determines how fruitful the word is. See, so that's the big punch. What's the main thrust, the main point? Now, number four, which is closely related to it, look for the relevant details. That's the key word, relevant details. The relevant details are those crucial to the main point of the story. Not every detail in a parable is relevant. Some details merely add realism to the story. Really important, otherwise you're going to make crazy things out of the parables. For example, it was the method of much of the medieval church to do this, and I could give you a lengthy reason why they went down this direction, but it's called the allegorical approach, and it's that every element in the story has some hidden spiritual meaning. So, for example, Augustine, who is exegeting the parable that we're going to try, and by the way, this is not the correct exegesis, so don't write this down, but violating this principle, he stretched it so that every single element had some hidden spiritual meaning. So, for example, in the Good Samaritan parable, the man who was beaten, Augustine says that was Adam. Adam, you see, so that's the original man. The robbers are, the devil, right? Now, the priests and the Levite that come by represent the ministry of the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, you see. The Samaritan who comes by represents Christ. I'm glad you got that one right. Yeah. The inn represents, the church. And the innkeeper, the Apostle Paul. And the two coins that he left, water baptism and communion, the sacraments. Ooh, deep, 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 yeah. That's really deep, like pit of hell deep.
How about the bandages?
You're looking for the relevant details. So, for example, Matthew chapter 20, the parable of the vineyards, the laborers in the vineyard. Remember the dude that was hired, the group that was hired at 6 and noon and 12 and 3 and 5. Okay? The only relevant details for the point is the group that was hired in the beginning and the group that was hired at the end. The group hired at 9, 12, and 3, it's just adding realism to the story. See? Just giving the story a flow and add realism. Because we know that because when we read the parable, there's something different said about that first group. Remember what it was? They made a legal agreement. A legal agreement. Nothing said about the others. It's just the idea that this progression is taking place. But then those at the fifth hour, or excuse me, at 5 o'clock, at the 11th hour, we find out what are their terms? Whatever. I'll pay you whatever's right. It's faith. Whatever. Trust in the landowner. So we begin to get the thrust of the parable, you see, but we make a mistake if we start trying to figure out, now, what is that, those people hired at noon, who do they represent? Nobody. It's just color. Just gives the story a sense of reality. Okay? So look for the relevant details. And finally, here's an interesting one. Look for the unexpected twist. If there is one, and often there is. You see? A parable's got a hook at the end. You're expecting one thing, and what? Didn't expect that. Of course, that makes for a great short story, doesn't it? You're going along one way, and then all of a sudden at the end, there's a totally different way of thinking. Who's the director? How do you pronounce his name? Lama Lama Lantana. I just speak in tongues. Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah, so he's famous for that, right? So at the end of his movies, there's always a twist, right? Something at the end, yeah. Look for the twist. So, for example, the laborers in the vineyard, The twist is, those dudes hired at 5 o'clock, they get the same pay. Nobody expected that. Everybody's listening, you know, maybe some are kind of half, okay, get to the interesting story. But everybody paid attention at that point. What? And it aroused a sense of unfairness. That's not right. That's the twist, you see? And the whole message is tied up in that twist. Look for the twist. How about the unrighteous steward? Remember that guy who found out he was going to lose his job because he'd been cheating his master? So he went around and he made all these shady deals. You think, man, the disciples are listening to that. That dude's going to get walloped by Jesus. And at the end, he gets commended. Wow. What? I could never have predicted that. It's an unexpected twist at the end. Several more here. Remember that there was that those three servants, and they had talents, 1 and 5 and 2 and 1, right? And so you see the guy gets 5, he gets 5 more, 2 more. One guy gets 1. Okay, what's going to happen to him? So remember what he gets? He gets more than nothing. He gets judged so severely, they cast him into outer darkness. Wait a minute. Outer darkness, really? That is so severe. It's not, he didn't steal. He didn't embezzle. He just squandered. That's all. And he gets this really severe punishment. Nobody was expecting that at the end. See, there's a twist. So be on the lookout for a twist. All right, let's see. Giselle, can you help me? Can we pass out number 2 to everybody? Let's try this. Give me a copy first. Thank you. Okay? Carlos, maybe if you want to get back to your group. Yeah. So I'll read the parable to you when everybody has them, go through these questions. These are a little bit more lengthy, but let's see what we can come up with. So read the parable. Read the parable. Let me read it to you. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. So we know the audience here. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What's written in the law, he replied. How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this, and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when we saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So to a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out the 2 denarii and gave him to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. So 5 questions. To whom was the parable addressed? How would you describe the character and attitude of the addressee? Number 2, what effect do you think the parable had upon him? Number 3, why did Jesus use 3 characters, a priest, a Levite, and a Samaritan? What's the main point of the parable? And then, how does it apply to you? So, to definitely get 1 through 4 answered, and we might not have time for 5. Go ahead, dive in. Now, you notice with a parable, you don't necessarily need context. Although sometimes you do, but in this case, you're okay. I gave you what you need. Here we go. Let me hear from the first group up here. So, when you're reading that parable, sure is tempting to look for hidden meanings, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, the fact that he said he poured oil and wine. What does that mean? 2 denarii. When I return, I will reimburse you. It's like the second coming of Christ. Huh? Yeah, I wonder what Augustine had to say about the oil and wine. So, to whom was the parable addressed? How would you describe the character and attitude of the addressee? Somebody.
The parable was addressed to the expert of the law.
Yeah, what does that mean? What's an expert in the law?
Someone who has knowledge about the principles of...
Yeah. And notice he gave a pretty good answer.
Yes.
To the first question. Matter of fact, he gave the exact spot on right answer. Now, whether he had heard Jesus in other scenarios say that, and so he was just parroting back, or whether he actually came up with it himself, we don't know. But he gave a pretty good accurate answer. Now, how would you describe the character and attitude of this fella? What's he like? What do we know about him?
Yeah, he wanted to test Jesus, and he tried to justify himself about what he knew about the written law.
Yeah. So, keep the microphone in your hand. So, why is he trying to test him?
Because he wanted to make sure that they have the same... like background that loving God means loving yourself with all your mind.
Yes, I don't think that's accurate. I think that's a wrong understanding of testing. It's he's not wanting to find out, is this Jesus a cool guy that we think alike? He's trying to expose him somehow and make him look stupid or bad to the crowds. So he's like the dude that the Pharisees or somebody, they put him forward because he's the expert, he knows all the answers to all the questions, and he's the guy who's going to trip Jesus up, right? Trip him up. Yeah, try to get him to say something that they can use against him to get on him. Okay? Can I have that third group, please? Just concentrate. Stop your work and concentrate. Oh, I'm not done with you yet.
Sorry, Pastor.
When I get a lively one, I keep him.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to keep you on the hook for a moment here. So what do we learn about his character and attitude? Tell me some more. What could you find out?
He was trying to ask Jesus about who is his neighbor, just like what you're saying. Like he wanted to trick who are his neighbor, although he knew he should know the neighbor, but in the context of loving the neighbor, like who are these people that I should love?
Right. So what does that reveal about his character? What do we find out about this guy?
He's pursuing the thought of putting, it's like he wanted to, just like tricking Jesus, so he wanted to make sure that Jesus would make a comment that's not right or something that would make him think otherwise, that it's a common sense. He should knew who his neighbor should be, but he was thinking of what are the things that he could do just to make sure that the neighbor that Jesus would say would be either the Jews or the Pharisees or the common people.
I think you missed the point. Can you pass it back to the next group there? Who wants to speak? Pam does.
I think we agreed that it reflects the character of being self-righteous and legalistic, because he knows he's an expert, and then he then justified himself. So I think it reveals self-righteousness and legalism. Yeah.
But what's he trying to do through these questions?
And he's also trying to put himself, aside from tripping Jesus off, he's trying to put himself, getting an okay, a check sign that he himself will inherit eternal life.
Yeah, I think we're missing. What's he trying to do? What else is happening here? Yeah, Charles?
Just try. He wants to look good before people. Apparently, there were lots of people listening to him as well.
Is there? I don't know if that's true or not.
it says in the first part, on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus.
Yeah, so it doesn't tell us about an audience. No, what are we missing here? Yeah, Carol.
Maybe he wants to prove himself that he's more knowledgeable than Jesus.
Certainly, that's true. Well, what's he trying to... Carlos?
Well, I was thinking he wanted to see if Jesus was also an expert. So, I don't know, but he wanted, as an expert, talking to somebody else who everybody listens to.
Yeah.
He wants to see if this guy knew what he was talking about.
Lynn?
I think he was also trying to qualify. He was trying to get Jesus to qualify who is his neighbor because they were discriminatory. He wanted Jesus to be able to approve the fact that, yes, I can love certain people, but don't ask me to love these people whom I despise.
Yeah.
Because their whole culture was that they wouldn't even sit down to eat with a Samaritan or somebody who they considered unclean.
Right. So he's trying to get out of obeying the commandment. That's the important point. He's trying to get out of it. He's trying to somehow justify his current behavior so he doesn't have to change his behavior. Good. All right, keep that, Pam. Keep that microphone. Why did Jesus use three characters, priest, Levite, and Samaritan?
The priest and the Levite, these are the religious experts in the law, and they are expected to do the right thing.
Okay.
The Samaritans, they are looked down at, and they're expected to do the wrong thing. So for
why are they looked down on?
Because they are half.
I like how you did that.
Half breeds. So I guess for a more effective rebuke, which will also the expert in the law can really relate to. Jesus used the characters that are significant to that to the addressee.
Yeah, you understand in first century Palestine, you couldn't put the word good and Samaritan together. It's an oxymoron. They don't go together. So the whole idea that we have the parable of the good Samaritan is the attention getter from the beginning. The kind of hatred and animosity, it's hard maybe to even comprehend. I can't think of a modern 21st century Filipino connection. For me growing up, this is like, this is southern Mississippi, and this is a black man and the grand poobah of the Ku Klux Klan. So that's the kind of hatred and animosity that's between these groups of peoples. It's a very intense cultural setting that the use of the Samaritan is the punchline that you don't expect, that gets people's attention, that makes the story interesting now. All right, last group. The group that will answer all of our questions, solve all of our riddles, clear up all of our mysteries, leave us dumbfounded and speechless with their brilliance and wisdom. Otto, it seems like the microphone has fallen to you. What is the main point of the parable, O wise one?
Well, we agreed that the main point is in terms of loving your neighbor, that also meant loving your enemy, not just those who trust you or respect you or love you, those who would love you back, but love those who hate you.
Think about the person or this situation that you would despise the most. I mean, just paint a scenario in your mind. Who would be a person, a situation, would be the most despicable, despised, abhorrent person that you could possibly think of? And that's the one that Jesus says. How you treat that person shows what's really in your heart and reflects what your real attitude is about God. It's not how you treat the person that you love, that you like, that you want to be around, but the most despicable, how you treat that person in your heart or in your actual attitudes reflects what you really think, what your attitude and your love towards God really is. So that's a strong point, isn't it? That's a good point to leave on. Selah. Pause and consider. All right, great. We're done 5 minutes early. Next week is now our official absolute guaranteed last week, right? And is it true that we are, what are we doing next week? Carlos? Prophetic presbytery. Okay, so bring your prophetic cloth and I have no idea. I just made it up. We'll see you next week.